Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan De Burka Butler is with us once again to bring a story from other parts of the world. Afternoon, Jonathan.
John, how are you doing?
Right, Italy we're going to go to first. And 18 wolves have been found dead. And this seems to be deliberate.
Yeah, it looks like it. So investigations are underway in central Italy. So this is a big park called, and it covers three regions, Abruzzo, Lazio, Molise National Park. It's about 500 square kilometres in size, so a little bit over half the size allowed.
Yeah.
Right, so just to give you context there, right, there's 3,300 wolves living in Italy, and we reckon there's about 100 who were living in this particular park, okay? But 18 of those have been found dead, and they were all found dead within a couple of days of each other. So it first came to the attention of authorities there about 10 days ago when they found a group of 10 wolves dead, and then they went out and they looked for more because they suspected foul play, and they found eight more. Sure enough, they took the carcasses back and they had a look. And so far, they say they have a very strong suspicion of poisoning. Now, why is that happening? Well, yeah, there's a couple of reasons for it. There was a report issued a couple of years ago by the European Union which showed that there had been a 35% increase in the number of wolves throughout the European Union, right? And that's the same in Italy. I saw a graph. I meant to put it up on Instagram, but I forgot. Back in the 1970s, there was hardly any wolves in Italy.
Yeah.
They almost disappeared, and now they've come back to that figure that I mentioned, 3,300. So they have gone, in the European Union, they've gone from strictly protected to now being protected, which allowed the Italian government to bring in a cull earlier this year of 160. Okay, so they were allowed to go out, presumably, and shoot them. Okay.
Okay.
I doubt they said to them, yeah, go off and poison them, because that would have meant poisoning other animals as well, obviously.
I see. Right. Okay. So I suppose the wolves don't, there's no one to prey on wolves to keep those numbers down.
Not particularly. Do bears prey on wolves? I know they have.
I suppose, a bear, yeah, I suppose, really. But no,
they
in
have
the same
small
way, like, there's
there,
a whole debate here about
reintroducing them. Yeah.
Yeah, because we've too many deer, because the deer are destroying forests.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
but then if we bring in the wolves, then we maybe have too many wolves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And therein lies the problem, because, again, throwing more statistics at you here, but the latest data from the European Union suggests that over 65,000 livestock are killed by wolves every year. So you're a farmer,
yeah,
and that's happening, and the number in Italy is between 10 and 14,000, give or take. If you're a farmer in Italy, the wolf is not your friend.
No, indeed not. No.
So obviously the investigation will have to take its course. But I mean, you know, there are people who don't like wolves who they suspect have laid this bait that was poisoned.
Oh, right. OK. I wonder, is it likely they'll be able to catch anyone, though?
Well,
yeah.
So hard to know.
So hard to know. Right. El Salvador we're going to go to next. A massive trial. 486 men going on trial.
486 men going on trial. These are suspected members of the MS-13 gang, known as the Mara Salvatruca gang, founded in LA in the 1980s, mostly from El Salvador. They were fleeing the civil war from there, and then they got rid of them from LA, sent them back to El Salvador, where they absolutely thrived, okay? And they were in a very long spat and a very long dispute with another gang called the 18th Street Gang. And it really got out of hand. I remember reporting on this years ago. We spoke about it years ago and over the years, and the murder rate was through the roof. So when Nayib Bukele came to power in 2019, one of the promises he made was he was going to crack down on these gangs. And sure enough, he did so starting in March of 2022. He basically rounded them up and threw them all into prison. And, and you'll have seen the pictures.
Yeah.
There was a lot of interest when Trump came back into power, because he did a deal with Bukele, sending people from the United States to this maximum security prison in the middle of nowhere in El Salvador.
Yeah.
So this is a show trial, okay? It is a show piece for Bukele, right? So this is, again, they're issuing pictures of this. They're like, it's like something out of an Orwell novel, okay? You've got these 486, well, there's actually 413 of them. 73 are being prosecuted in absentia.
Okay.
So there's about just over 400 of them, and they're all shaved heads, all wearing masks, all wearing white jumpsuits. There's no judge. Okay. So it's just, they're facing a screen, but you're not seeing the picture of the person that's talking to them. And there's all of these things.
So it's been done remotely then?
It's been done remotely, to protect the identity of the judge so they're not assassinated. Mm. And these, collectively, these 486 suspects at this point are being accused of committing over 47,000 crimes between them, including murder, extortion, drugs and arms trafficking. Now, how they're processing this whole thing, I don't know the detail of it. I've got to be honest with you. I mean, how do you do this? How do you go through them all?
And is it each individual you're charged with X, Y, and Z, or collectively they're accused of?
See, this is the thing. I don't know. And they haven't said how long it's going to take. Mm. They haven't said what the sentencing is going to be like. Are they going to say, whatever, Juan Moncrief, you stand up there, you're sentenced to life in prison? Or are they going to do it, you're all sentenced to life in prison? Mm. The details around that are kind of scarce, to be honest.
At the same time, though, these gangs kind of set up, would it be fair to say, their own little kind of narco states within El Salvador?
I remember a few years ago, one thing that really stood out to me was these gangs called a truce a couple of years ago. I think it was about 2015 or something like that. And I remember the head of one of the gangs was in prison and he called a press conference and all of the media were invited to come into prison to listen to this guy giving the press conference. That's how much control they had over every aspect of life in El Salvador. So when Bukele came in and said he was going to throw everything at them, he really did it. And the crime rates have collapsed as a result, right? So the murder rate was 18.1 out of 100,000 in 2021. That was down from, it was much more before that, to 1.6 per 100,000 in 2025. Mm. Now, he claims El Salvador is the safest place now in the Western Hemisphere. Now, some people argue the data, but again, I remember a quote from anecdotal evidence of a grandfather talking about the fact that his grandchildren were able to go out and play basketball without the risk of being shot. And Bukele's popularity ratings are through the roof. He's somewhere between 85 and 90%, depending on what source.
My word. These people, they're all members of one gang.
They seem to be all members of one gang. I have looked at a few sources, and they only mentioned the Marisalva Truca 13 gang, the MS-13 gang. No mention of the 18th Street gang. I don't know why. I don't know whether they were wiped out in this civil war between the two or what happened. It'll be interesting to see what happens, but you got to bear in mind, this is a showpiece.
Yeah.
It's a show trial. It's to show the world this is what we're doing and this is how we handle crime in El Salvador.
But even if that murder rate has plummeted so dramatically, that is something that can't be denied.
No.
Right, Kosovo we're going to go to next. Another, I suppose, legal story. Three people have been sentenced to life in prison.
Yeah, so this was back off a skirmish, they're calling it here, that took place in September 2023. It initially started out over registration plates that were banned within Kosovo because they had sort of references to Serbia on them that they didn't like. But anyway, it all kicked off then. Mm. And there were Serbian militants who basically tried to take over a town called Banska. Now, Banska is in the north of Kosovo, just not far from the border with Serbia. It's very small. There's less than 600 people that live there. But they took over a monastery and tried to take over the town. And they're eventually kicked out. An awful lot of them escaped and slipped over the border into Serbia. So there's actually 45 Serbs who've been charged, but only three of them, the three that were caught eventually, have gone up in trial. And two of them have been sentenced to life in prison and one has been given a 30-year sentence. And essentially what they are guilty of is trying to secede the north of Kosovo and join it with Serbia. That's what the judge said in his ruling at the end. So that's what they've been sent to prison for.
Yeah. So that's essentially trying to secede from the state, really.
Yeah.
This
is what they're saying. Now, it should be said that this particular incursion took place, I think it was over in 2 days. But the fact that there was a military aspect to it and the fact that it was led by a guy called Milan Radojcic, who's wanted for previous crimes in the war between Kosovo and Serbia that took place between 98 and 99, gives it that political aspect,
yes,
if you
absolutely,
like.
Yes, absolutely, you know? Yeah. And has Serbia said anything about this?
They said that it's all a sham.
Yeah.
And generally you'd ask a question here in terms of, what's the chances of getting this guy Radojcic over and getting him extradited from Serbia. But of course, the fact that they don't even recognise each other, or Serbia doesn't recognise Kosovo at least, would suggest that there's no extradition deal between the two.
Yes, one imagines not. France, we're going to go to next, where the weather forecast is not to be trusted.
No, this is a bizarre story. This is a story around an investigation that's been launched after two unusual spikes in temperatures were recorded at the Charles de Gaulle Airport twice in April, right? So the first one was April the 6th, around about 7 p.m. The temperatures for the afternoon had been around 18 degrees Celsius, and then suddenly they went up to 22 degrees before falling back down to 18 degrees again, right? The same thing happened on April 15th, where it went up to that very exact figure of 22 degrees. So those temperatures are automatically fed into the meteorological agency Meteo France, who people will be aware of, and they record them. But there are people who observe this stuff, right? Yeah. So there's clubs that look at the weather. And they raise the alarm on this. So this is a non-profit climate observation society, shall we say, called InfoClimate. And they said to Meteo France, look, there's been this really unusual spike. You might be worth looking into. So I don't know how the investigation all came together, but eventually they put two and two together and they found that there was a betting market based in the United States called Polymarket.
Well, you can bet on anything,
right? Yeah. And they found that on April the 6th, somebody made in the region of $14,000 predicting that the temperature in Paris would be 22 degrees. Mm-hmm. And then on 9 days later, on the 15th, somebody else made 20 grand predicting that the temperature would be 22 degrees. So needless to say, Meteo France have decided to get in touch with the airport authorities there at Charles de Gaulle and say, you might need to look into this.
Right, okay. So would it be the actual temperature sensors themselves were tampered with?
Yeah, so the speculation on the chat boards of InfoClimate are that somebody went with a cordless hairdryer and upped the temperature.
Easy,
that's what they're
easy
saying.
Easy as that. Oh, my God.
Now, that seems a bit ridiculous, but anyway.
And this Polymarket, it's all very murky, and there's all sorts of suspicions as to who might be placing bets on this. It could be, for instance, people inside the Trump administration with inside knowledge political developments and all sorts of things.
Yeah, there has been, I think there was a CNN investigation that was done looking at things around the war in Iran.
Yeah.
And what was going up. Now, obviously that would include the incursion that happened last year as well. So, you know, there's question marks over it, all right, in terms of insider trading. And I think there was a story about an Israeli journalist coming under pressure to change his story in order to make it fit the narrative that some people who were gambling on an outcome wanted, if you know what I mean. So it's dodgy enough stuff.
Yeah, there will be, I suppose, it'd be hard to reveal who's actually, who's betting on Polymarket. Right, we're going to go I suppose it's both Kenya and Nigeria. This is almost like a ride between Dublin and Cork, and it's about accents, is it?
It is, yeah. It's about accents, specifically about who speaks better English, really. So William Ruto, who is no stranger to controversy, he's been president there a good few years now of Kenya, that should be said. He was abroad in Italy, I'm sure a state visit, and he was talking to some Kenyans who were living in Italy on Monday at a function, and he said that Kenyans spoke some of the best English in the world. And so that was fine up until that point. There's no disputing that. But for some bizarre reason, he decided to start slagging off Nigerians and saying, well, you know, it's much better than Nigerians who, he said, quote, were incomprehensible and required a translator. Now, you can imagine in the world of social media, this was captured straight away, went up on social media, and a Twitter spat between the two nations ensued. So a lot of people are not very happy about that. But it's something that's been going on for a while, apparently. Nigeria and Kenya have a bit of an online rivalry over all sorts of things. I think the president of Nigeria had slagged off Kenya the month before about their economy doing much better, and And that kind of things.
So heads of state are engaged in this kind of stuff.
Indirectly.
Yeah.
Is
Ruto famous for saying these kinds of things?
Specifically about Nigeria?
Or just, you know, opening his mouth before thinking about what's going to come out of it.
I'm trying to rack my brains to think, is he? Not that I'm aware of, to be honest with you, but I'm sure I'll find some examples if I go digging. Nothing comes to mind.
But obviously, English isn't a native language. You lose that term very loosely to Kenya or Nigeria. Mm. So that, like, there would be only a proportion of the population in each country who would speak English routinely.
I think it's the first language in both, places. It is the lingua franca, if you like. Mm. But there are, of course, hundreds of languages certly in Nigeria.
That would be
local. But it is widely spoken.
Indeed. And what does next tomorrow mean?
Next tomorrow is Nigerian English for the day after tomorrow.
Well, that makes sense, really.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it makes total sense. Yeah. Right, so what should we look out for on next tomorrow and the next tomorrow after that?
April 30th, there's elections in Antigua and Barbuda for 17 seats. They only have about 100,000 people there, so a very small parliament. Then on May the 1st, it's obviously May Day. There's a movement in the United States called the May Day Strong movement, which is basically encouraging people to walk out and protest the Trump administration. So big protest planned for that in the United States. And then on May the 2nd, 15 years since the death of bin Laden, would you
believe? Right. Okay, I'm sure President Trump will be
celebrating
that accomplishment by another president. Jonathan, thanks a million. Jonathan DeBerka Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.